digital LEDs pulse and flicker, finally resting on the number 24.
Previously on 24.
As someone who has alienated followers by choosing the unpopular course, I suggest you tread carefully among your people. They will come after you.
I need you to authorize clearance for someone to get inside the bunker. Once he's inside, he'll carry the ball.
And he kill the president.
We have a cover.
A cover? Who?
Assad.
Assad? Try and make it look like he did this. This is Tom Lennox. I need to speak to the ranking Secret Service agent on site.
Carson wondered if you were playing us. He said that he didn't want to bring you into this, but I defended you!
Nothing justifies the killing of a president.
Delivery system software
was programmed for 5 high-priority targets.
Because of your carelessness, we are now down to 3.
More than enough for our needs, Gradenko.
I don't want to be exposed like this any longer than necessary.
Do you think the authorities know we're working with Fayette?
If they don't, they will soon.
Bill, it's Jack. I've got the correct address for Gradenko's safe house.
Turner's team will be there any minute.
Clear! Clear! Bedroom's clear!
Mr. Buchanan, there's no sign of Gradenko or anyone.
Not knowing you took it. That was from Gradenko. You tipped him off. Now over half my team is dead!
Wasn't Gradenko on the phone? Those aren't his men!
Who sent them?
Your father! He has my son!
Take a look out the window, the adjacent roof.
Dad, it's over!
There is no empire to protect. There's no legacy left. I'm the one you want. You let Josh go.
I will surrender.
Could have had it all.
What are you waiting for? Do it! Who am I talking to?
It's Charles Logan, Jack.
You must have exhausted all your options to find Gradenko. Come and see me.
Come alone.
The following takes place between 4 p.m. and 5 p.m.
Fayette's truck drives along a dusty road.
Go ahead. We're on our way to the rendezvous.
Good. We've arrived.
Is the shipment there from Nevada?
No, they are behind schedule. But I'll be here any moment.
How soon can you deploy once we arrive?
It'll take us 2 hours to assemble the delivery system and run diagnostics. Another hour to secure the payload.
That's longer than I'd hoped.
Listen, we are working with advanced technology. It can't be rushed. Just remember, without us, you'd be delivering your payload in weeks instead of hours.
I haven't forgotten.
It seems necessary to remind you now and then. I'll be glad when we no longer have to deal with these people.
They're living in the dark ages, and they act like they own the world.
I'd much rather be fighting them.
If we succeed today, we'll never have to. The Arabs and the West, they destroy each other.
In the president's bunker.
The ambassador just arrived, Mr. President. He's in the waiting area.
Good. Will Tom Lennox be joining us?
I spoke to Reed Pollock. He says Mr. Lennox is briefing the speaker and minority leader.
When Tom's finished, tell him I want to see him, please. Mr. Ambassador, it's good to see you.
Mr. President, first allow me to express my country's shock and deep regret over the devastating attack in California.
Thank you, sir.
Of course. Any assistance you may require, you need only ask.
I'm asking you now, sir. That's why you're here. I believe you know Amri al-Assad.
Mr. Ambassador, I have never met Mr. Assad in person, but I know him by reputation. His organization has carried out repeated terrorist actions against my country.
Your own policies precipitated those actions.
That's your justification for killing innocent people?
You and I define innocent in different ways.
My own deputy lost his 7-year-old son in one of your bombings. That is how I define innocent.
We are not here to air past differences.
Then why are we here, Mr. President?
In our last meeting, I informed you that we were in contact with Assad. You told me it was a positive step toward peace.
And I meant it at that time. But I must confess, after the last attack, I didn't expect to see you in the same room with him. And I'm not so sure I care to remain here either.
It is no more pleasant for me, Your Excellency.
Would you give us a moment?
Certainly.
Assad is here because of the attack. To be frank, sir, we have 3 more nuclear weapons loose in my country, in the hands of terrorists.
We didn't know that.
In less than 1 hour, Assad is going to go on national television and issue a statement. It will be a global appeal to extremists. Now, he's going to urge them to put down their arms and engage in peaceful negotiation with the West. Now, we are hoping to compel someone to come forward with any information regarding those nuclear weapons.
A petition like this, coming from Assad, it could have a profound effect.
We're counting on that.
What do you need from us?
I want a public statement of support from your prime minister, and I want it to follow right on the heels of Assad's.
Mr. Assad is a polarizing figure in my country. A public endorsement of him could have grave political consequences for the prime minister.
Then you tell your prime minister that we have a carrier group operating less than 25 miles off his shores. My advisors are pressing me hard for a military response, so if we are attacked again, I won't be able to hold them off.
This is sounding like an ultimatum, Mr. President.
It's not an ultimatum, Mr. Ambassador. I'm merely pointing out the fact that neither the Prime Minister nor I have the luxury of worrying about political consequences on a day like today. I am putting my presidency on the line, so please stop handing me excuses. Get on the phone and make this happen.
The ambassador reflects. At CTU,
Nadia, what's the status?
Turner's team just completed their second sweep of the house, but the results were negative. If Gradenko was using this address, he did a really good job cleaning up after he left. There was one operating landline. Morris is checking on the router to see if there was any recent activity.
Morris? Morris?
Yes.
Any luck on the landline?
No. I mean, not yet. They must have used an inverter to stack their calls, because I can't get any records out.
Mr. Buchanan, Jack Bauer's on the line.
407.
Go ahead, Jack.
Bill, I'm near the airport, across the street from the Grandmont Hotel.
I know. What's going on?
It's complicated. Are the units dispatched?
We have 2 units on the way to the Grandmont. I'll have them meet you.
Okay, I want you to contact LAPD. Have them set up a 5-block perimeter around the hotel. They need to locate my father and take him into custody.
Your father?
He's involved in this. I'll debrief you as soon as we've got time. Were you able to pick up anything on Gradenko?
No. The Glasgow Street house was deserted. We're processing it for clues, but so far we've come up empty. We can't be sure Gradenko was even there.
I think I might have a lead.
What is it?
Charles Logan.
Logan?
I just spoke to him. He says he has information on Gradenko.
How the hell did you trace this to Logan?
Through my father. Bill, I need you to get me a helicopter that can take me to him.
He's at his retreat in Hidden Valley under house arrest.
House arrest? How is that possible? He was involved in the murder of David Palmer.
He brokered a closed-door deal. He pled guilty to obstruction of justice. The public never even knew of his involvement in aiding terrorists or David Palmer's assassination.
Give me that helicopter.
We have one in the area. Shouldn't take more than a couple of minutes to have it rerouted to your location.
Thank you. Marilyn.
Jack. What happened?
My father escaped. I don't know where he is. He might be in the area. I want you both to go back to CTU. Josh, I know that there's a lot to explain, and I promise you, when this is over, you and I are going to sit down, and I will talk you through what happened.
Okay.
Let's go.
You're not coming with us?
No, Gradenko wasn't at the house. I need to follow up another lead. Take these people back to CTU.
Yes, sir.
Josh, get in.
Jack, thank you. Thank you for saving my son.
He reminds me of you.
Jack strokes her cheek.
You can see it in his eyes. Marilyn, please, you have to go.
Okay.
Jack watches gravely as the SUV pulls away. In the presidential bunker, Reed Pollock escorts Carson through security.
I'll take those, sir. Step on through. Thank you. Sir.
Gentlemen. Sign in, sirs.
Pollock seems distracted, but then picks up the pen and signs.
We'll need to process you again, Mr. Carson.
Of course.
The security guard opens Carson's briefcase and feels in the pockets.
What's your occupation?
I'm a policy analyst with the Stanton Institute.
The security man pulls out and checks a marker pen.
State your business here? I'm here to consult on civil defense procedures.
At the request of Tom Lennox.
Picard eyes Pollock and checks a dictaphone.
Test 1, 2, 3. Test 1, 2, 3.
Picard appears satisfied and closes the briefcase.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've got a problem. Tom Lennox tried to warn Secret Service about us.
What? Yeah, I stopped him before he was able to alert anyone, but I had to restrain him.
You said that Lennox was on board with the plan.
I thought that he was. Either he's changed his mind or you were right. He's been playing us all along. Regardless, we're going to have to deal with it.
Right.
In the utility room, Lennox struggles to get free. The others enter.
Son of a bitch. We've got to move him. I'm going to need this space. Give me some tape.
Carson cuts Lennox's bonds.
Let's go over here. Sit down, hands behind your back.
Carson leads Lennox to the other side of the room and forces him to sit down with his back to a large pipe. He binds him with tape as Pollock looks on nervously.
We're gonna have to take care of him. Make it look like a suicide.
No. No. Listen, eliminating President Palmer is for the good of the country, right? It's the only way to get him out of office. Killing Tom Lennox only benefits us.
We don't have any choice.
Tom Lennox is a very smart man. Now, I think that once Vice President Daniels is holding the reins and enacting the policies that Lennox himself created, we can convince him to keep quiet.
I'm not gambling my life on Lennox's good judgment.
Look, it's a risk, but it is a risk that I am willing to take. We're not cold-blooded murderers. We're just trying to save our country. Either way, we do not have time to resolve this now. Assad goes before the cameras within an hour.
You said it would take 25 minutes to assemble this?
25 to 30.
Then you better get started now. If we're going to frame Assad for the assassination, then this bomb has to explode when they're both together. We're never going to have a better chance than now.
Lennox's eyes widen in horror at what he overhears. 4:12. End of part one. At CTU. Jack flies in a helicopter. Reed Pollock leans over a computer in Tom Lennox's office. He punches some keys, and messages sent flashes up on the screen. He exits the office discreetly.
Reed?
Yes, Melinda.
I'm still waiting for the briefing stats that Tom promised me.
Well, Tom just emailed them to you. They should be on your screen by the time you're back at your desk.
Okay. By the way, is Tom in his office?
No. No, Tom is down in Conference B. He's meeting with some policy analysts from Langley.
I just came from Conference B. Secret Service is meeting in there.
Well, they must have switched to another room then. Listen, I'll try to track Tom down for you.
Pollock looks slightly rattled as he walks away. At CTU, Morris continues working, clearly getting frustrated. Chloe approaches.
What is it, Morris?
I have to uplink these traffic vectors to the Homeland subnet. I've been trying. And it just won't go through.
Check your SIP adapter.
What about my SIP adapter?
You've specified the wrong slot assignment.
Oh, what an idiot. Thank you. That'll work.
Did you call your sponsor?
I'm getting tired of you giving me the third degree.
I covered for you. I didn't tell anyone you took a drink.
I didn't take a drink. I spat it out. I told you.
You promised me you'd call your sponsor.
And I did.
Well?
We had this long talk. I feel a lot better. Really.
You're not acting like it.
Why don't we install a breathalyzer at my workstation? Will that satisfy you?
I just want to make sure you're okay.
I helped terrorists arm a nuclear bomb today. I'm not going to be okay for a long time. That doesn't mean to say I can't do my job. Excuse me, I have to swap this server port.
Chloe gives Morris a sidelong glance as he walks brusquely away. 4:19. She picks up his PDA and takes down the number of Genie, who is listed as sponsor. Nadia approaches.
Where's Morris?
He's swapping out a server port.
He's supposed to be checking on Gudenko's landline.
Well, he's juggling a lot right now, being short-handed. We're all trying to pick up the slack.
Nadia looks askance as Chloe walks away and then pursues her.
Now, I'm wondering if it's more than that.
What?
Look, he's been tortured. He's under a lot of stress. Maybe he should be pulled.
Yeah, he's a little upset, but he's still better than 90% of the tech people we have around here. We need Morris on the floor.
Bill observes their conversation from a distance.
All right, Chloe. But I'm keeping my eye on him. If I see anything else I don't like, I go to Buchanan.
Right.
Chloe breaks away and goes to make a phone call. Bill notes this and, leaving the busy meeting room, heads out onto the operations floor.
Hi, Jeannie. This is Chloe O'Brien. You don't know me, but I'm Morris's ex-wife. Could you call me back as soon as possible? It's important. I'm at 310-597-3781. Thank you.
Nadia. Jack will be arriving at Logan's estate any moment. I want TAC teams on alert and prepped for redeployment.
Yes, sir.
We're out of leads. Let's hope Jack can get something from Logan.
420. Jack gets out of his helicopter and jogs across the neat lawns of an expansive property with what look like dressage paddocks. He looks gravely at Logan, who opens his mouth as if to speak, but then closes it again.
We have a moment, please.
The security man withdraws.
It must have been hard for you to find out about your father's involvement in all of this.
I'm not here to talk about my father. Dmitry Grudenko, what do you know about him?
I know Grudenko supplied Fayette with 5 Russian tactical nukes, one of which exploded this morning in Valencia, one of which you managed to disarm, so that leaves us 3 we need to recover.
That's correct.
I get regular intelligence updates, and I still have my sources. So, you need Grudenko to find Fayette.
Can you help us?
Yes, I can.
But you want some kind of plea agreement. You're unbelievable.
I don't blame you for thinking that, Jack. But I want you to know that I'm not the same man that I was 2 years ago. Just as you're not the same man who was dragged away and thrown into a Chinese prison. I've changed. I've had time to think about what I did.
I've had time to reconnect to my faith.
So no, I don't want a pardon. And I wouldn't accept it if it was offered to me.
What do you want?
Nothing. I want to give you the information you need with no conditions.
I'm listening.
I never dealt with Grudenko directly, but I know how we can find him.
How?
Through Anatoly Markov. He's the Russian consul general here in Los Angeles.
CTU contacted the consul general as soon as we saw Grudenko's name on the list. He denied any knowledge of his whereabouts.
Markov's lying. He's been the liaison for Grudenko for years.
Liaison for what?
For business concerns looking to acquire the products that Grudenko provides. Now, don't make the wrong play, Jack. If you go down official channels, you'll end up in a hopeless maze. Markov has friends in the highest levels of the Russian government. They can protect him indefinitely. If you want to access what he knows right now, you need to go through back channels.
What back channels?
Me. I'm your best chance to get the information you need in the time frame you need it.
What are you proposing?
That I speak to Markov, myself, in person.
Why would Markov talk to you?
Because I have leverage. Markov was involved in the conspiracy that put me where I am today. I didn't give him up. But he knows I still can.
Jack fixes Logan closely with his piercing blue eyes.
I don't trust you.
If you want to find Grudenko, maybe it's time you started.
Jack turns away and stares intently ahead. He then turns back towards Logan. 4:28. Jack makes a call.
Go ahead, Jack.
Mr. President, thank you for taking my call.
You said it was urgent.
I think we have a way of finding Grudenko.
It was my understanding that
we lost Grudenko. Are you telling me we have a new lead?
Yes, sir. Mr. President, the lead is Charles Logan.
Logan?
Yes, sir, I'm with him now. He claims that his administration had dealings with Grudenko and that he has a contact that will lead us to him.
Who?
Anatoly Markov, the Russian consul in Los Angeles.
When we learned about Grudenko, Jack, I placed a call to the consulate myself. Now, that's a dead end.
Not according to Logan. He wants to meet with Markov in the consulate in person. He says that's the only way that we can get the information we need.
Jack, Logan is under house arrest.
That's why I'm calling you, Mr. President. We need an executive order granting Logan a temporary furlough.
Do you realize what you're asking me? Logan was behind the assassination of my brother.
Sir, I would not be calling if I didn't think this was necessary.
I don't trust this man, Jack. This could be some maneuver on his part to gain his freedom.
I understand, but I think we need to take a chance on him. I will enter the consulate with Logan as part of his security detail. Sir, I believe we can trust him. I think he's after something else.
And what exactly would that be?
Redemption.
Jack, I have no desire to facilitate any kind of redemption for Charles Logan.
Mr. President, right now, I think he's the only way we're going to find Grudenko and the bombs.
Put him on.
Jack crosses to Logan, who appears to be reading a Bible. 429.
Hello, Mr. President.
I want to hear it from your lips. Tell me why I should agree to this.
Because you need me, Mr. President. It's as simple as that.
I can talk to the Russian consul myself.
Yes, sir, you could do that, but with all due respect, you'd be wasting your time. I have a prior relationship with Markov that we can exploit.
Again, with due respect, sir,
I have more experience dealing with people of Markov's character.
You mean criminals like yourself?
I know how he thinks, and that's an advantage you can't afford to ignore.
I want you to know that if this is some kind of move to escape custody, I will commit the resources of my administration to hunt you down.
I can assure you, Mr. President, I have nothing like that in mind. Several years ago, I was in the same situation, and I reached out to your brother for counsel. David helped me successfully navigate that crisis.
Yes, he did. And you repaid him by killing him.
I would like to do for you what your brother did for me. I would like to help you get through this.
Don't make the mistake of assuming this represents any kind of forgiveness on my part.
I understand that, Mr. President, but I hope over time to earn your forgiveness.
Put Jack on the phone.
Logan rises and hands the phone to Jack.
Yes, Mr. President.
I'm granting the furlough. Just make it count, Jack.
I'll do my best. Thank you, Mr. President.
This isn't easy for you, is it, Jack?
What?
Possibility I may not be the same man you've hated for so long.
Jack stares at Logan. 431. Grudenko stands on what seems to be some kind of airstrip in the desert, surrounded by at least one functional plane and several wrecks. He looks on as a truck approaches and pulls to a halt.
You're late. Did you have any trouble?
We had to bypass a vehicle inspection at Riverside. Other than that, we had a smooth trip.
Good. Let's have a look.
Open up. They go to the rear of the truck. A tarpaulin is pulled clear and the side hatch opened to reveal a sleek piece of ordnance.
The U.S. military has spent millions to develop this drone.
Today, American taxpayers will get a demonstration of what their money has produced.
According to Charles Logan, Anatoly Markov, the head of the Russian consulate in Los Angeles, has information on Grudenko. Logan and Bauer are going to see Markov now. I want comm locked on any communication outside and possibly inside the consulate. Morris, are you still the lead on decoding diplomatic communication leaving the consulate?
Yes.
I want you to hand that over to Chloe.
Why?
Because of what you've been through today. I'm not sure you can handle it, and we can't afford any mistakes.
Look, I'm
Chloe, I want you to take over Morris's workload on the consulate.
Hold on a second.
It's okay, Morris.
No, it's not okay. It's not okay. I'd like to say something to everyone. I'm very sorry that I gave the reprogramming device to Fayed. If I could take it back, I would, but I can't. And if you don't think I can do my job, Mr. Buchanan, then I should leave. But I can do my job.
Okay, Morris. Give your task full priority.
Thank you.
Mr. Buchanan, I have to disagree with your decision. I'm sorry, Morris, but I just don't think you're ready.
Your objection is noted, Nadia. My decision stands.
Morris nods to Bill in muted gratitude and then casts a look at Chloe, who appears extremely uncomfortable. Tom Lennox struggles to free himself. Carson, who works nearby, turns to him.
You're wasting your energy. And you're distracting me. The president's gonna die. There's nothing you can do about it.
Pollock enters in nervous haste.
We're starting to ask questions about Tom's whereabouts. Are you on schedule?
I told you the bomb would be ready in 30 minutes, and I meant it.
Okay.
Pollock draws a labored breath. Carson throws him a look.
Is there a problem?
No.
You can't go soft on us now, Reed.
No, it's just starting to hit me. What we're about to do. My God. We're killing the President of the United States.
We're trying to save this country. That's all you need to think about.
Pollock looks less than certain. 4:34, end of part 2. Part 3, 4:39. Chloe sits at her workstation. Nadia approaches purposefully.
Chloe, look at the function prototypes on Morris's report.
What's the problem?
Take a look.
You mean the missing sectors?
Yes, the missing sectors.
Did Buchanan make a mistake by reinstating Morris too soon? No, the Pentagon put a file lock on these items. I told him we could backfill them later.
It's not going to be to anyone's benefit if you're covering for him.
I'm not.
Nadia looks skeptical. Chloe watches Nadia leave, then gets up swiftly and crosses the operations floor to where Morris is at work.
Morris, I need you to tell me the truth. Have you been drinking?
Just had a couple of beers, love. Didn't think anyone would mind.
Don't be sarcastic. Your data merge is incomplete. I had to cover for you. I just told Nadia that...
Wait. What was incomplete?
Look.
Oh, for crying out loud. These sectors are irrelevant. I only fill them in when I file my final report.
You know that Nadia wants these completed.
Nadia only wants to prove to Buchanan that she was right and that I shouldn't be here.
No one is out to get you.
Look, even I know that I shouldn't be here. There's a big part of me that wants to go home, crawl into bed, and forget this day ever happened. But I'm staying because CTU needs me.
Chloe's face registers deep concern. 4:40. Logan, dressed in jeans and plaid shirt, lays out a suit and chooses a tie from a drawerful to go with the cellophane-wrapped shirt in his hand. He opens a decorative wooden case on his dressing table in which sit an array of pins and cufflinks and an expensive fountain pen. He takes out a small metal badge. He bends down to look at a framed photo of himself and his wife Martha in apparently happier times. He moves through into his bathroom and leans to scrutinize his own face in the mirror.
And established my goings. One step at a time, Charles. One step at a time.
Logan's almost ready. We should be able to get to the consulate within 45 minutes.
What have you got on Markov?
We ran his name through the interagency subnet. He's a career diplomat, assigned consul general in 96. Prior to that, worked in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for the Russian Federation. No red flags from NSA, Interpol, or CIA. As far as they're concerned, he's clean. Jack, what if Logan isn't telling the truth?
We're out of options. I have to trust him.
You know, we have no jurisdiction at the consulate.
Just make sure you have teams ready in case Logan's lead pans out.
All right.
O'Brien.
Chloe, contact the highway patrol. Have them clear a ground corridor from Logan's estate to the Russian consulate.
Yes, sir.
Jack, dressed in a suit, has been thumbing through Logan's Bible. In yellow highlighter are the words Logan quoted. Chloe eyes the mobile on her desk and finally answers.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, this is Jeannie. You left me a message?
Yeah, thanks for getting back to me.
So what can I do for you?
Look, I know you talked to Morris earlier and that this is probably way out of line and against your confidentiality agreement, but it's just, I'm really worried about him.
I'm sorry. I haven't spoken to Morris since I left the program 3 years ago.
Chloe turns slowly and looks across at Morris's empty workstation.
Okay, sorry to bother you. Have you seen Morris?
No, sorry.
Chloe moves into a meeting room and picks up the phone.
IT.
Is Morris down there?
I haven't seen him, but if he comes down here, I'll...
Chloe, her face creased with worry, heads out through the glass doors into the corridor. 4:43. She hesitates for a moment outside the men's washroom and then heads in.
Morris?
Chloe?
Morris, what are you doing in there?
Wait.
Open the door! Open the door!
What the hell is going on?
I called your sponsor, Jeannie. She said she hasn't talked to you in 3 years.
Are you out of your bleeding mind?
I trusted you. I put my job on the line for you. You lied to me.
I didn't lie to you.
Yes, you did.
I didn't lie to you. Jeannie's not my sponsor anymore. Ted is.
Ted?
Yeah, remember Ted with the hair? He's my sponsor. I called him just like I told you. Check if you want. I'll give you his number.
Not now.
The man who has walked in on them withdraws discreetly. Morris turns, hanging his head.
I don't know what to say. I was worried about you.
Marching into a men's room isn't worried. It's obsessed. Now, I appreciate your concern. I love your concern. But, darling, I have to take a look at what's going on in your head. It's not pretty.
Sorry.
Chloe, frowning, walks out briskly. Morris turns back to the sink and then, glancing over his shoulder, produces from his back pocket the pint bottle of whiskey. He cradles it in his hands and gazes at it. Unscrewing the cap, he stares at the bottle, his mouth puckering as if in anticipation. He then pours it down the sink and puts the bottle in the bin. Melinda opens the door to the president's office.
Mr. President. From the Attorney General, sir. The executive order authorizing President Logan's release.
Palmer wordlessly takes the document from the secretary and then, his face dark, signs it before handing it back.
Thank you, Melinda.
The communications director wanted you to know that they'll be ready for an on-camera rehearsal with Assad in 5 minutes.
Fine. Melinda, have we heard from Tom Lennox?
No, sir. I've been trying him. There's no answer at his office.
Find him. I want him present for a signed statement.
Yes, sir.
Palmer's eyes narrow. Tom Lennox looks around at Carson, who continues work on the bomb. He coughs. Reed Pollock looks over as if in concern. He hurries across to the apparently choking Lennox.
Sir, I'm going to take that off of you. I'm going to clean up that cut. If you try to call out, Carson will kill you, and I cannot stop him. You understand?
Okay.
Pollock peels the thick tape from Lennox's mouth.
You've got to put a stop to this, Reed.
No, Mr. Lennox. When this is done, and the president is out of the way, I think that you will see things differently. I think that you will see that this is better for our country.
No. You're going to destroy this country, Reed. You're just as bad as Fayed.
No, no, there must have been a moment when you were on board with this plan. Were you playing us from the beginning? Were you? Or did you change your mind along the way? I need to know.
That know this, I was against you from the start.
Pollock and Lennox exchange a look of pure venom. Pollock jumps slightly as his phone goes. He pulls it out and reads the caller ID.
Very disappointing.
He replaces Lennox's gag.
Hello. Yes, hello, Melinda. Yes, I'm just with Tom right now. He's just finishing the briefing. You know, I understand. I will let Mr. Lennox know right away.
Okay,
thanks. Okay, the president is asking for Lennox. We have got to move.
I'm almost done.
Carson carries out a delicate operation using a syringe to draw out a red-coloured liquid from the body of one of his marker pens. He then transfers the liquid into a small metal canister with a screw neck. He screws this alongside another similar canister into a small block of metal and slots the hole into the body of the dictaphone. He snaps the cover back onto the machine.
Finished. It's armed.
Okay.
Now, this is the detonator. Press 624, enter, and the signal will activate the bomb.
Okay, 624, enter.
Yeah. Once the signal's been sent, it'll take 15 seconds for the chemicals to intermix. The kill radius is only 10 feet. Make sure Palmer's inside it. You sure you can do it?
I'm the only one who can get close enough to that podium without attracting attention. I can do this.
449, end of part 3. Part 4, 453. Gridenko's men move the drone in its wooden crate. Pollock walks through the corridors of the presidential bunker. He passes two uniformed military who cast him a look. His face is drawn and filmed with a sheen of sweat. He passes other functionaries who look towards him. He pauses, breathing hard and grimacing, then walks on, seeming simultaneously resolute and fragile. He passes two armed guards. He passes through into the studio area.
All right, everyone, rehearsal's up in 5 minutes. Please notify the president.
This is Com 1, we're ready. Five. How's our weapon?
As the final preparations for the broadcast are made around the podium, Pollock edges hesitantly towards the dais.
Excuse me, can we have some water for the podium?
Sure.
Thank you.
Pollock steps up onto the podium, attempting to make some kind of pretense at checking it over. He slips his hand into his jacket pocket and produces the silver dictaphone. He succeeds in secreting it beneath the lectern. He turns guiltily as President Palmer and his retinue, along with Assad, stride into the room.
Before we continue, I would just like to express my appreciation. You're taking a great risk, Mr. President.
You and I are both sharing that risk, sir. And maybe that, in and of itself, is something of a victory. I just hope that someone will listen to our appeal.
You sound skeptical.
The people we're trying to reach, they abandoned the political process a long time ago.
All we need to do is create a foundation to build on. The rest will follow.
Reed.
Mr. President.
This is Omri Al-Assad. Mr. Pollock is our deputy chief of staff.
How do you do?
Hello, sir.
If you wouldn't mind getting comfortable behind the podium, I need to speak to Reed for a minute, please.
Of course. Mr. Al-Assad?
Yes.
Would you like to review the teleprompter copy before you rehearse?
That would be fine.
I've been trying to reach time for the past hour. Is there something I should know?
Something you should know, Mr. President?
Reed, I know how Tom feels about this address, but I was under the impression that he put his opposition aside and was working with me to make this policy succeed.
Well, I'm sure that that's a valid impression, Mr. President.
And he'll be here.
Yes, sir. He will be here.
Good.
Palmer eyes the twitchy Pollock shrewdly. Tom Lennox, bound and gagged, looks desperately all around him. On a large pipe opposite where he sits, he notices a valve and a pressure gauge. An idea seems to form in his mind. He looks across to where Carson stands with his back turned and then begins straining every sinew to stretch the toe of his shoe up to knock the valve. He finally succeeds, and the needle of the valve moves swiftly towards the red. Carson, alerted by the noise, runs across and shuts off the valve again. The needle winds backwards to safety.
You try that again and I'll kill you, you understand? I should kill you anyway. With the president dead, nobody's gonna think too hard about why his chief of staff hanged himself.
Carson busies himself in the corner. Lennox struggles. In the studio, the president prepares.
Here we go for rehearsal.
I'm gonna go and check on Tom, Mr. President.
Pollock walks somewhat shakily away. He exits through a pair of swing doors with circular windows. He looks back through to see Assad at the lectern and Palmer fewer than 10 feet away. Holding the radio detonator given him by Carson, he steels himself and then punches in the code. The clock speeds backwards to zero. Beneath the lectern, a red light flashes on the bomb.
I'll give you a 7-second countdown. The last 4 seconds, you'll be silent.
Pollock takes cover. Red liquid spills from the bomb. Assad notices.
All right, here we go. In 7, 6, 5.
What is this?
Pollock, standing behind the door, is hustled out of the way. Tom Lennox looks around him. Fired sits in his truck with the nuclear bombs. Grudenko's men arm the drones. Jack moves out from Logan's house. Security men with torches move through the darkened wreckage of the studio. Bodies lie strewn around. Assad, his face burnt, lies unconscious or dead. One of the guards eventually locates Palmer and turns him over.
Code 5 in Sector 3. Citadel has been hit. Send a medical team. I repeat, Citadel is down. Send a medical team now.
5 p.m. The end.
There's a bit of time to recompose yourself before a brand new episode of Lost next. Kate, Locke and Saeed are about to set off on another crazy rescue mission. Then at 11, sparks are definitely set to fly in one of the most dramatic rescue meets to date. Yes, the entertainment is relentless.